Kate Manahan, thank you for joining me for the 66th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as new Mainers. Today, my guest is Ahmed Mohammed. He was born in Somalia, lived his first 7 years in Kenya, mostly in the refugee camp at Dadaab, called Dengali. His family then moved to the U.S. in 2005, Virginia, then Lewiston, and finally Portland in 2011. 4 years ago, his mother relocated the family to Portland for more job opportunities, and it definitely changed the course of Ahmed's life as well. Being a good student, Ahmed was encouraged to apply to Wayne Fleet and is about to enter his senior year there in the fall. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Ahmed.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for letting me share my experience.
Pleasure to have you in the studio. So you were just a baby when your family fled Sako, Somalia, during a war to, dare I say, climate change and violence. And I wonder what kinds of things your parents tell you about the lives they lived in Somalia prior to the unrest.
Yeah, before the war, like Somalia was really peaceful. People, it was a good community. And the place I lived in was Sako, southern Somalia, and it was like in the village we lived in was mostly our tribe. So like I would be related to everyone in the whole village. And so, my mom told me that it was a place where, she called home. She felt very comfortable, and we had farm. Like, my grandfather had a great farm. He was a good businessman and a farmer, and so it was very, we had a good, comfortable, and good family business before the war. So,
And then, with the war, lost everything.
Yeah, we lost, everything. We had all the cows and everything we had, it was torn away, and no home.
You had mentioned before something like 50 cattle.
My grandfather was really he was very successful, and he was able to provide for a lot of people, and so
that must have been a devastating loss.
Absolutely.
A different way of knowing oneself, from providing for your family and others to not being able to provide. Wow.
Absolutely,
So you lived in Kenya a couple of years before your family entered Dadaab, which is one of the larger refugee camps in the world.
Yep.
And that was about the year 2000, right?
Around 2000. And, my dad, before we moved to the Dadaab, coming from Somalia, we had a good life. And then, my dad didn't immediately want to go to a refugee camp. So he tried to, work it out. We lived in, some cities near Nairobi, the biggest city in Kenya. So he worked in Nairobi, come back, help us out. And so that's how we sustained our lifestyle around in Kenya. And then it got harder. So, we had to, we needed help. And we decided to move to Dagahle in Kenya. And that's how we moved to Dagahle, Kenya.
And this camp is run by the UNHCR, High Commission of Refugees. And that camp is run by CARE, an organization that's a nonprofit that helps run camps, camps.
Yeah, when you move there, they give you there's a card that is like a food stamp in a way. So for every, if you have five family members, it's in the card, and that's use that card for every month or every 3 weeks. I have no idea. They would give you some sort of donated rice and oil, and then flour, like all that. That's how you, like, you barely like live. It wasn't, yeah,
barely enough for yeah. people to eat.
Yep.
People look pretty hungry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very
yeah.
thin population there. Can you describe for us how the camps were set up, and significantly, specifically how your family, how your family's camp looked within Dagahale?
Yeah, Dagahale is like there's three different camps in Dadaab. Like Dadaab is like the biggest, like we, everything combined is called Dadaab. It's Dagahale, Hagardera, and then Ifo. And we lived in Dagahale. So there's like sections, there's tents, and then like there's like, you know, yeah, mine, like minor city in a way, yeah. And
it's a tent city.
Yeah, it's a tent city. Yeah, and then
grid.
And his name, like, yeah, A9, like A1, A2, A3, A4. Like, we lived in A9, so
it looks like a battleship board. Have yeah. you ever played that game?
No, I haven't.
Oh, yes, it's just like that.
And yeah, and there's, and then, like, I remember this, like, in our, in A9, there's, like, a big trash, like, you know, outside of, like, the tent city. I don't know what you call it, but yeah,
that's where the trash dump
yeah,
was.
Yeah, yeah.
And what did they do with the trash that's
it's
generated?
It's just there, so it's pretty, like, it's pretty bad. Yeah.
Wow.
Like, looking back into it, like, I haven't, like, when I lived there when I was a kid, like, I didn't really understand the situation we were in, but like, if I look, like, when I look back into it, I'm like, oh, that's really horrible, you know, and like, grateful that you're here. And yeah,
I have to say, I was really moved by the pictures of these camps and the yep. people in the camps. And the videos I saw really spoke to desperation of men, women, and children.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But you were a child, and your experience was different because it was just the water you swam in. And yep. so what was it like? What kinds of food did you eat? You said rice?
Yeah, we ate rice, some bad quality anjero, and it's pretty good, yeah.
And then what about privacy? Seems that in these Tyvek tents,
yep.
that it would be hot and you would hear everything.
Yeah. Sometimes, like, during the nighttime, you could hear the hyenas, like, you know, laugh, like, you know, you could just hear that. But you get used to it, you know, and it was like, for me at that time, like, and like, I just lived life, you know, and, you know, it wasn't.
And how about your parents? They were having more children while they were there?
Yep, yeah, we had, yeah, my mom had Mustafa Muhammad, like my younger sibling, and another kid, Burhan, at that place. And yeah, you don't like go to the doctor. Like, she gave birth at our house, you know, so it's, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was
pretty. Were you present for that?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, actually, I remember when she was giving birth and everything, yeah.
Was it scary for you as a kid to see that?
Not really. I remember when Burhan was when he was about to be born, I was like, me and my friend, well, his name is Ali, he lives in South Dakota, and no, North Dakota, I mean, like, we were arguing, is it a boy, a girl, you know, a boy, a girl. Like, we were near this tree near our kitchen, so I remember like everything, and he was a boy.
Oh,
and my grandfather
kind of
named him Burhan, so yeah.
And what does that mean?
I have no idea. I don't know. Yeah.
A name.
So, yeah.
So I'm curious about the schools in Dagahale, a tent city of about 300,000 people
yep.
in a dry, windswept corner of Kenya. In 2013, there were 7 schools with a total of 15,000 students in this yep. camp. And I wonder what the schools looked like. And I wonder if you can recall anything about the education there.
Yeah, I remember the school I went to was called Ilino. It was like right near my, like, near my house. It was like a minute away from my house. If you walk there, I think it was 1 to 6th grade. So it wasn't very functional. Like, it wasn't, because you don't have a lot of money, so you can't like run a school successfully without good amount of money and a good, like, you don't have great quality within the teachers, and people don't really care about education. It's just for the matter of just going to school. So there's no, it's not a culture, you know, of learning around that place. You just, you know, try to survive and, you know, work. And so it wasn't, I don't, like, what I, from what I remember, for me, I was a really young kid, but like I didn't skip. I didn't really care, and like they don't have cell phones. They wouldn't call your mom, and you know, it doesn't matter. So it was just, yeah, that's how it was.
Was there a chalkboard in the front of a room, or were you outside more?
Yeah, there was a chalkboard in front of the schools. A lot of kids in the school, and if you're late, you get whipped. And
whipped?
Yeah.
Where do you get whipped? Hands?
You would lay down, and they would whip you, you know, in on your back and all that stuff. Yeah, it was pretty. Yeah, that's how it was, you know. You have to, like, your teacher, like, there's a culture that your teachers are like your parents, so you have to respect them. And they basically have a lot of rights over you, and so that's, yeah.
How many kids would you guess would be in one classroom?
I don't know, around 20, 25. Yeah, it depends. So, like, and then there is a variety of, there's a lot of, like, it's not like the age difference. Like, you know, you have to, like, pass a test in order to go to the, you know, the other grade. So you could have like a 13-year-old kid with 5 years, like it doesn't matter. Uh-huh. So it's not, it's based on knowledge, not like how old
a
you are.
Proficiency based education. Yep. Once
yeah.
you know this, then you go
and
to
the
second grade.
And then you go
grade.
To the, yeah, it's like that, yeah. So,
interesting.
Yep.
I think as you were talking about this the other day, I thought it might be a little sad to go to school. About 1% of refugees get resettled.
Yeah, and you can't like reach your potential. So you don't, like, it's not. You just go there for the sake of learning. You don't really do something with it. So you don't, like, you're just, you're not motivated enough to, like, you know, go to the school. Yeah,
it's not connected to the world.
Yeah, it's like going there and knowing that you're still going to be here. You know, like, you're stuck, so.
And you might not have realized how amazing it is elsewhere.
Yep.
You go to school and learn how people are living and probably start to wonder why it is it's so different for you.
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
I think I would have. On CARE's website, it said that 51% of the people in the camp were women and 58% are under 18.
Yep.
That makes a lot of kids in this camp.
Yep.
Is this where you learned to play soccer?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is what I would do like in our free time. You play soccer, just, you know, get everything out of your mind. Just play like that's it was we would use. Like some trash bag. We would design a soccer ball. Like, we can't afford a soccer ball, so we would use some trash bags and all that stuff. And then, you know, I don't remember
tape
how to
up.
Do it. Yeah, tape
mm-hmm.
them up and then burn them. Like, so they would they're stable, and we would play soccer with that. It was
It's brilliant.
It's brilliant. Yeah.
And there's something that has meaning, right?
Yeah.
In the
that,
classroom, it's
yep,
all
that's,
just
it's pretty. Yeah.
Static.
Yep. And then, like, after you're done playing soccer, we had there's this. And then for every house, there's no, like, water. Like, you have to go outside. It's, like, outside of the tent city. And we would go there and drink the hot water. Like, I remember that. So it was, and then no sandals. You walk outside without shoes. And it's pretty hot, too. But
do you know the magazine National Geographic?
Yeah, yep.
Have you ever seen the one where they show the soccer balls that were handcrafted all over the world?
I think I have, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, that's pretty good, yeah.
Sounds like just exactly what you were doing there.
Yep, absolutely, yeah.
So what did you think soccer meant to you as a child, since that was a place where you could go
for
be
me,
yourself?
Soccer was something that, like, connected me to, like, my inner self and my friends. It's like you get away from everything. You just play the game, try to win, and I'm very competitive. So that's, like, soccer is like my house, you know. Like, that's like, I feel so confident, comfortable, you know, and, like, that's where I express myself, my anger, my satisfaction, like, everything, you know, and my eagerness. Like, it's something, like, soccer is very, like, truly a sport where a lot of people, like, it's close to heart for a lot of Somalian kids, and
I mean, that's really quite eloquent.
Yeah,
soccer
you.
Is your house.
Yeah.
It's where you're at home.
Yep, absolutely.
You're listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. My guest today is Ahmed Mohammed. Originally from Somalia, raised in a refugee camp in Kenya before coming to the U.S., where he is now entering his senior year at Waynefleet, which is a private high school in Portland, Maine. It's actually a private school, preschool to high school, but he's in high school. So you said that you play soccer for Wayne Fleet, Ahmed.
Yep, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
What can you tell me about your team?
We're very close. We're really good. We have a good chemistry. We're growing as a team. There's a lot of seniors for this year soccer team. So we grew throughout, like from my freshman year to my senior year. So yeah, I feel like we have a good bond, and hopefully we win this year. Yeah.
What class do you play in? Are you class B?
Oh, class C. Class C. Yep. Yeah,
that's exciting. What position do you play?
I play center mid. It's a really important position within the team. Like you try to you defend and and you attack at the same time. So it's really important. Yeah.
When you were in the camp, how many hours a day do you think you played soccer?
I have no idea. Probably like 4 hours a day. Just you play and then go around some and then come back still playing, and yeah, it was something. Yeah.
How about now? How much soccer do you play a day?
Now I've actually been introduced to basketball, so I play basketball and not that much, not as much as I should be, but it's I don't know. It's in Portland specifically. There's not a lot of soccer lovers. In Lewiston, they constantly play. They actually had a Ramadan tournament, like a soccer tournament, throughout the whole month. And I would partake in that if I was in Lewiston, but like I'm in Portland now. We don't have that. It's not like I don't see that like close knit a community within like people like I don't know it's not I think there's less youth like that love Somalian youth that love soccer in Portland. So yeah,
would you how would you characterize the difference between the way a Somali plays soccer and a native born American?
It depends. You could like Somalians, we like to we I don't know it's when you're playing with, like, you make fun of yourself, like, with other friends, and it's like, enjoyable. It's something that, like, it's stress-free, it's, you just go there and play, It's more about just playing and expressing yourself than about, it's different. It's really different, yeah.
I bet it is.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of the book Outcasts United?
No, I haven't, no.
It was written by Warren St. John, and he went down to Atlanta and wrote a book about a woman named Luma who had grown up elsewhere playing soccer.
Yep.
And she came to the States, but then she saw people playing soccer like she had played in Jordan, I think.
Okay.
And she saw it was a very different kind of soccer, and she started these teams with children from all over the world.
Oh, wow.
And the language they all spoke was soccer.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Great, great read if you ever get the chance. Yep. Made me think of you when I met you and your passion for soccer.
Thank you, yeah.
A different kind of passion.
Yep, absolutely, yeah.
And what's your plan and hope around soccer in your future?
I'm planning on playing Division III soccer if I can. That's what I'm planning on doing. And I'll still be intact with the sport throughout my whole life. And yeah, it's something that I enjoy.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really one of those games you can play forever, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah. No matter how old you are, you can just play, yeah.
When we spoke before, you said that Wayne Fleet has a culture of learning that has changed you as a student and a person. And I wondered if you could tell me more about your school.
I told you this story. When I was in eighth grade, Abukar lives in Riverton. He told I told him I'm going to Wayne Fleet, and he told me, Wayne Fleet is going to change you. And at that time, I didn't care. I didn't believe.
To kill you?
No, change you.
Change you? Oh, yeah. Yes.
Wayne Fleet is going to change you, and I didn't believe it. I didn't care. So I was just leaving all my friends and just sacrificing what I could do with my friends, graduate with them, coming to Wayne Fleet, alone. I don't know anyone. And then at the moment, I was thinking, I don't know, and then after going to Wayne Fleet, what I saw was, there's culture of, people, they love to learn, they respect the teachers, in school, like, to be, you know, educated, and the classes are, like, very rich, you know, and, like, the conversations and all that stuff, and it's something, like, you value education so much, like, you understand how we change a lot of people and societies. Like, I value education. It's something that, like, something that's very powerful, and yeah, I love to learn, you know. That's what I discovered, you know, in Wingfleet.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite subject?
For now, actually, like, before, when I was younger, like, when I was learning language, I used to like math, because that's only, that's something that, like, I understand numbers, but not language. And as I grew and learned English more, and with the help from Sue, I began to understand that I'm very creative. I like words, language. Like, now my favorite subject is English and history, and I'm growing as going through Wingfleet. I learned that, you know, I'm a very I'm very within. Like, I'm not like someone that's I don't express myself. I express myself with, you know, yeah, within.
You're
so
more of an introvert.
Yep.
With a live,
yeah,
inner life.
Yeah, that's what I do, and that's what I discovered, yeah, through Wingfleet.
Wow. Mm. Part of their mission says, on their website, that we believe that diversity is one of the conditions of excellence at our school.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
How do you find diversity at Wingfleet?
Wingfleet, like, they try really hard to recruit and, like, get as many different people as they can. Like, it's something that, even, like, if you're more diverse, you have much more perspective, you know, within the students. You know, you don't want to have, like, people that are the same, that grew up the same. Like, you don't really learn. Like, you do learn. Yeah, it doesn't challenge you. Mm-hmm. Like, you think in different ways. You have, like, people from, you know, all around the world, and it's something that, like, you learn from that. Yeah,
I imagine that's very enriching.
Absolutely.
So what else do you do at Wingfleet? You said basketball, soccer.
Yep, and I'm in RAW, as racial awareness at Wingfleet. And yeah, it's a group where we just talk about what's happening in America, and, like, we talk about it. It's something that, like, you just talk about it, and we try to, we have movie nights sometimes, and we just try to educate the school and everyone about what race is, and that's a very empowering group. Yeah.
Oh, so absolutely. You have a group that talks about racism,
yep,
and reverse,
yeah,
racism,
yeah,
and reverse discrimination.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
And this year was perfect, because, like, there's so much going on within the country, and people are starting. Like, we were doing this since I don't know, like, you know, how long. My freshman year wasn't really, but this year is so much, you know,
picking up speed.
yeah, it's like a lot. Like, people are starting to wake up of how much race is very important, something you should be aware of, and yeah,
it's so important to talk about it.
Absolutely.
And not just listen to other people's opinions, but to find out what your own are.
Yep, yeah.
What a wonderful opportunity for your school and then the community, because you offer outreach through that, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I understand you had an African literature class. Was that last year?
Yeah, it was last year, before I took that class. Yeah, I just saw, my school was offering that. I was like, oh, this is, you know, really nice. And
elective?
Yeah, it was an elective. Yeah, it was really interesting. So, you know, something I thought that would, challenge me as a student. And I learned so much from that class. So, yeah, that's why I took it.
And what a unique perspective you would bring to
a
conversation in that class. What did you learn about in that course?
Yeah, and that, like, we learned, like, actually, before this class, I had no idea how much colonization affected Africa. We learned how, like, colonization affected Africa through time. And for, like, within the history books, they just state the facts, you know, and the events. It doesn't really show, like, the emotions, and doesn't really depict the characters, you know, that within the country, like through literature and not like reading a lot of novels, we saw like there's a recurring themes and characters through time, and something like so deep, like you learn so much, you know, how colonization affected the Africans and how it was after colonization left, there's, you know, neo-colonization, people are still, their mind is like, you know, still embedded within the system, and it was, you understand how powerful it is, and it's hard to get out of it, but like people are so like, it's still going on today, and yeah, something.
It becomes built into the culture,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, it's, yeah, something within the culture, and you can't go back, so you have to like, just go on.
It's an amazing awareness to take with you even before you go off to college.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So what are your hopes for the future, for yourself and for your family?
I'm hoping, I have to like go back to the refugee camp, try to help as much as I can. And yeah, that's something that you, like my mom always told me, like you have to, you know, help out the people. Like that's something, it's part of me, you know. Like a lot of people weren't given the opportunity my family had, and like I can't fail. I have to like help out and, you know, go back and help out the people. Yeah, something is really important. Yeah.
Ahmed, you are such a wonderful young man.
Yeah, thank you.
And with such a desire to help your countrymen.
Yep, thanks.
Who don't get the ability to have access to the educational opportunities you have enjoyed.
Yep.
You have a really big heart, and I know that you'll make a huge difference.
Thank you.
To many people in the world.
Thanks.
Soon and later into the future. Thank you for coming on New Mainers Speak today.
All right, thank you. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Ahmed Mohammed. We will close today's program with a song he's chosen for us. Ahmed, would you introduce this song to our listeners?
Yeah, this is, I got this from YouTube. It's Somali instrumental music. When I listen to it, like I could hear like all the Somalian songs that I've listened throughout my life. It's like there's this connect, like this rhythm within all of them, and so I thought it's like it tells a lot, like good story and a powerful message. Yeah, like it's something that's close to my heart.
Thank you.
Yeah.
desde la Universidad de Southern Maine, Southern Maine Community College, Community from USM. I'm very confused today because I have some vacations. Sorry. Vamos a comenzar con música de carnaval peruano. Mi hermanita Lili está en Cusco. Qué bueno que ella pueda visitar. Cusco es uno de los centros del mundo, es el ombligo del mundo. Los invitamos a visitar Cusco cualquier día de estos.
Comparsas bailando por calles y plazas. Ya salen comparsas por la Magdalena, ya salen pandillas por San Juan Bautista, talco serpentina, alegría plena, talco serpentina, alegría plena. Manado, mapilla, caña, ya, ya. sarusa manado mapirha kaina chayatam sarusa mamaiki achanchu tutam puris hanta mamaiki achanchu tutam puris hanta yachachung yachachung kukulisarus hanta yachachung yachachung kukulisarus hanta Yo soy huamanguinom caipi purichcani Yo soy huamanguinom caipi paseachcani Purina captini purica muchcani Paseana captini paseaca muchcani Purichmana purich purichina iraiku Paseachmana paseach paseachina iraiku
Pirkas kai, ama matu.